This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.
Raised on songs and stories, heroes of renown.
You're all very welcome to Raised on Songs and Stories here on Near 90 FM. My name is Gerry Cooley, and for the next half an hour or so, we're going to be travelling the highways and byways of both Dublin City and County, meeting all sorts of people talking about all sorts of things. Songs, poems and stories, all about the good old days. And you never know, if you listen, you might hear somebody that you know. So get the kettle on, make yourself a cup of tea, put the feet up and sit back and enjoy yourself.
Ring a ring a rosy as the light declines, I'll remember Dublin City in the red.
Our very first guest today is a woman called Maura Mahon, formerly Maura Heron, brought up in Ainslie Bridge Road there in Fairview. Even though she was born in Rathgar, she regards herself as a Northside girl. Did a lot of job switching around Dublin in her 20s. She has a great interest in history, and when I caught up with her, she was painting a beautiful picture of a Christmas Eve in Dublin town in around the early 1930s, and Maura picks up the story.
On Christmas Eve, my mother and father and my eldest brother and the next brother, Dermot, Brian and Dermot and myself. Now, we would be brought to town, to the Savoy, and we up to the restaurant in the Savoy, and they had a quartet, and we used to go for a meal there on Christmas Eve. And I loved that, because you'd be coming home in the dark and you'd be looking up the stars and you'd say to yourself, I wonder, is he coming yet? The others would be in bed, she'd have someone to look after them. Mm. And that was, we were brought into town. Now, we didn't get a lot of toys. You got a book and you got maybe a doll, depending on your age. And I always remember that Kathleen Nula and I, she bought us red velvet dresses. They were gorgeous for Christmas Day. But like, that was a magical time. Always magical. I always feel Christmas.
And staying in O'Connell Street with Maura, she describes the very first and only time she ever visited Nelson's Pillar with her mother. They were charged a shilling, sixpence each, to go up to the very top, where they got a beautiful view of O'Connell Street.
Once went up Nelson's Pillar. My mother met her brother-in-law outside of McDougall's, and she was standing talking to him, and it was a lovely day. And I'm looking up at Nelson's Pillar, and I said to my mother, I've never been up Nelson's Pillar. She says, well, come on. It was a shilling to go up it. We went up, and they carried on the conversation up on the top of Nelson's Pillar, and I'm looking all over Dublin. It was a lovely shop. Used to be at the Pillar there now. I think it's a fun fair thing or something now, called Noblets.
What did they do?
Oh, sweets. The most magnificent sweets. Every sweet you could think of. Toffee and all that. I suppose it would be on the style of Thornton's. Mother Noblet. There was a statue of Mother Noblet up over it. And she was a crinoline lady with a parasol. It was a beautiful shop. Right. My aunt worked in that. My father's sister worked.
Just to finish off the story about Mother Noblet's, I believe that it was closed because of a famous incident when a rat got into the front window in Noblet's in O'Connell Street. There was always a huge competition with Lemons down the other side of the GPO between the two shops who sold sweets. And as I say, the rat got into the window in Mother Noblet's. And before they could get the poor unfortunate rat out from among all the sweets, a photographer got there from the newspapers, took the photograph, and that was the end of Noblet's. Okay, as I said in the introduction, Maura worked all over Dublin. She started out in Terenure in a butcher shop called Eastman's and eventually made her way into the city centre, into Cleary's. She did some part-time work up in the hospital stakes, and then she did a little bit of work up in Grafton Street. And let's hear what she has to say about her time in Grafton Street.
The 40s. I went to work in a very old establishment in Grafton Street called Lambert and Bryan's. It's no longer there, it's gone a long time. They were hardware and ships, chandlers and all that carry on, you know. I loved hardware, love hardware. And I joined the union. They wouldn't, it was a very Protestant firm.
And how did you get the job?
I just went in and asked them, had they got any work? And that was it. Then I went down to Cleary's.
Saying goodbye to Maura but staying in Grafton Street, we're going to spend a little time now with a man called Ciarán Bass. First met Ciarán up at the National Day of Commemoration in July 2009 in the Royal Camanum Hospital. And a couple of weeks later, while I was working with Pat Liddy doing the walking tours of Dublin, I turned into Grafton Street with a group of tourists in tow. And who did I spy? Only the bald Ciarán standing there with a top hat and tails and gloves. He's the concierge of Brown Thomas. The minute I saw him, the song, the Dublin Saunter, came into my head. And we had a chat, and Ciarán was very open to talk to me, and he loves his history of Dublin. So we had a little bit of a chat first about what it's like to be standing in a Grafton Street every day doing a little bit of work.
Tails, top hat and gloves.
And how long are you doing that job?
About 5 years. I'm with the company about 27 years. The first 6 years of that I was as the Switzers, because Switzers was the original, and where Brown Thomas is now, that's where Switzers was originally. So I went into Switzers, and then I went into the men's suit department in Switzers, and about 1992 Brown Thomas crossed the street and bought out Switzers. And I continued in the suit department. I'm on the door about 6 or 7 years, and it's fantastic. I love it.
What is it like to be standing on outside Brown Thomas in one of Dublin, if not Ireland's, most prestigious streets?
It's fantastic. It's really wonderful. And you see all aspects of life. Customers and regular customers coming in and visitors shopping. And then life on the street. Yeah. And regarding my job, you meet the most famous. Look, everyone's famous to an extent. But then you meet like celebrities. I've met a lot. I met a lot of famous politicians and sporting personalities.
Okay.
And just good, nice Dublin people too. And you can get to know the life on the street. For instance, you might say about twice a week you see two or three elderly men going up Grafton Street. In the course of my day's work, maybe you see three chaps going up and they're in their 80s. Mick, Kevin and Sean. And they might meet, they go to Mass in Clarendon Street Church. Beautiful old Dublin
there,
church.
Yes, loved it.
And they'd go to Mass and then they'd come out and they might have a coffee. Well, it's usually a pint and a small one. And they'd have a chat with me. And then it's goodbye, man. You know, bye, gentlemen. See you again. And then maybe one day you notice there's only two. And one say, Mick has passed on, he's died. And you see that part of life. Then you see all aspects of it. See life passing by, yeah. The girl, the flower girl, the Molly Malones, okay, yeah. As I said, and all our nice customers. And you get visitors coming in, shopping, or just on the street.
And is there customers, for instance, in Brown Thomas that have, say, been shopping there for over 50 years?
Oh, yes. You get our customers here, their parents and their grandparents shop there.
It's a family tradition.
It'd be a family tradition. Okay. And you see the same people going to Bewley's and shopping Weir's.
Yeah.
It's tradition.
I then asked Ciarán, did he have any favourite places in and around Dublin? Then we went on to talk a little bit about pubs, and we got a bit of pub lore from Ciarán, which was great stuff, because that's so much of that's been lost now that we don't know the connections between the publicans throughout the pubs. Most publicans in Dublin move from one pub to the other.
Of our native city, as a Dubliner, Say I'm sent on a message during work, a delivery, say, I have to cross St. Stephen's Green. I will look at the gate, the arch to the Royal Dublin Fusiliers. And if I'm passing through Stephen's Green Park, you see all the monuments and busts to our patriots, be it Kettle, killed at Ginchy, Countess Markowitz. Fabulous one of Robert Emmett. Yes. I remember that was outside, opposite the College of Surgeons. That was outside the railings, Jerry. Yeah, it's in now. I can't be exact. It's in about 15 years. I drink in a pub called the Lord Edward. The Lord Edward Fitzgerald. And up in the lounge, they've all the memorabilia, pikes, etc., of the 98 period. Yeah, passing Trinity College, the Garden of Remembrance, the Fight for Freedom up in Parnell Square.
Gate outside Stevenson's Green. In Dublin folklore, it would be referred to as Traitor's Gate.
That's true, I've heard that said, yeah.
It's pretty bad, because my own... I have relatives who fought the English Army during the First World
Irish
War.
Regiments,
and came back and had to keep the head down.
That's
you have a connection with the Royal Dublin Fusiliers, don't you?
I had uncles, and then my late dad, Billy... Dad was in the British Army.
Right.
And his father, my grandfather. But then... I think, as far as I know, in 1922, after the truce and the treaty, when the British Army evacuated and we came to Free State, Dad's regiment was stood down. Okay. Then he went into our new army, which was then, I believe, the Free State or the National Army.
You take a pint?
Oh, I do, yes.
Favourite pub in Dublin?
Oh, jeez, I've loved it. Grogan's. The Castle Grogan's. God, I remember the first time I went into Grogan's. Actually, the current owners of Grogan's, Tommy Smith from Cavan and Paddy Kenny from Tipperary. There's a link there, Jerry. So I drank all in the air. I started drinking in O'Donoghue's in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Well, the Dubliners were well on the road then. Excuse me. But I remember, yeah, I drank in O'Donoghue's of Merrion Road, the famous pub.
I know it, yeah. Nice old pub.
Ah, smashing.
You can still see there,
The Dubliners called it, the Dublin people, Dubliners called it the Strip. Right. Doheny and Nesbitt's, the Baggot Inn. The Waterloo House. Not all in the one night now. Toners. All smashing dubs. Called the Strip.
Right.
They might have borrowed it at the time from the American programme, 77 Sun Street, just to be cool, as the American says. And then, yes, MacDaid's, of course. And then, yeah, I really loved MacDaid's. You see Luke Kelly there, and I was a great friend of his brothers, Jimmy Kelly and John Kelly. But I drank in MacDaid's, and then MacDaid's was up for sale. Oh, about 1973. And Grogan's happened to go up for sale. The same time MacDaid's, or around the same time MacDaid's went up for sale. And two men bought Grogan's, Tommy Smith from Cavan and Paddy Kennedy. They owned it, the Honey Pot, at the corner of Gardner Street, near the Rose Bowl.
Callan's was there as well, wasn't it?
So I believe, yes, and the Blue Lion, Mick Birmingham and all that. My first time ever to meet Paddy Kennedy and Tommy Smith, it was not when they were in Grogan's, it was a Christmas Eve, when they owned the Honey Pot. And I remember we were in MacDaid's on Christmas Eve lunchtime, and Jimmy Kelly, we were with Luke for a while. Luke went off, he didn't come with us, but it was Jimmy Kelly and a famous trade unionist and a famous Dublin man. Unfortunately, he's a vast knowledge of his native city, was Seamus Geraghty. He's a brother of Des Geraghty. So Shea Geraghty and Jimmy Kelly and I got into Shea's car and we went down to the Honey Pot and we had a rip roaring sing song, Christmas Eve. And then within a matter of months, they bought Grogan's.
And yes, that was Ciarán really starting to go off on one about the pub lore scene. We could make one or two programmes alone about that subject. Let's get back to a little bit of singing. The song that I had in my mind all the time for Ciarán when I first met him was the Dublin Saunter. And after those interviews were completed on Grafton Street, we went around the corner to a small tailor shop down in Wicklow Street. Danny was the tailor, and a couple of the people were in the front listening to us recording this song while we were in the dressing rooms at the back. And Ciarán got a round of applause, and I think you'll agree he deserved it. This is Ciarán and the Dublin Saunter.
I've been north and I've been south, I've been east and west, I've been just a rolling stone. Yet there's one place on this earth I've always liked the best, just a little town I call my own. For Dublin can be heaven with coffee at 11 and a stroll in Stephen's Green. There's no need to hurry, there's no need to worry, you're a king and the lady's a queen. Grafton Street's a wonderland, there's magic in the air, there's diamonds in the lady's eyes and gold dust in her hair. And if you don't believe me, come and see me there in Dublin on a sunny summer morning. I've been here, I've been there, I've sought the rainbow's end, but no crock of gold I've found. Now I know that come what will, whatever fate may send, here my roots are deep on friendly ground. For Dublin can be heaven, with coffee at 11, and a stroll in Stephen's Green. There's no need to hurry, there's no need to worry, you're the king and the lady's a queen. Grafton Street's a wonderland, there's magic in the air, there's diamonds in the lady's eyes and gold dust in her hair. And if you don't believe me, come and meet me there in Dublin on a sunny summer morning. And if you don't believe me, come and meet me there in Dublin on a sunny summer
morning. And if you don't believe me, come and meet me there in Dublin on a sunny summer's morning. Now, Ciarán, you even have me singing. Thank you very much for those words and that song, Ciarán. And from one legend of a singer to another, we move over to the north side again to talk to a man called John Fowler. John Fowler is a tenor. He calls himself a fiver because he's a pretty small guy. And he says he holds the world record for doing 7 weddings in the one day. He even did mine once upon a time. We caught up with him talking about his recordings that he did back in the late 50s and early 60s and the one time he sang in the Theatre Royal in Dublin. We also hear a version of The Silvery Strands of Tremore, which was written by Mayo Higgins, with the great Tommy Dando on the organ and the Bell John singing the lead vocal.
On the silvery sands of Tremore, sure everyone's happy and gay. Just come along and see what fun it can be, and soon we'll be planning to stay. Where there's laughter and peace and contentment, and a welcome you've not had before. All your cares fade away as you dream or you play on the silvery sands of Tremore. There are beautiful places in Ireland, the grandeur we proudly may boast, but there isn't a place half so charming as the gem of our southern coast, where the white breakers from the Atlantic come tumbling on to the shore, and the blue skies above smile a welcome to the silvery sands of Tremore. From the promenade out to the boardroom, to your heart you could lose on the way. Take the Donnerray walk or the cliff top, by a pathway that follows the shore. There the middleman stands as a guardian for the silvery sands of the Tremore. On the silvery sands of the Tremore, sure everyone's happy and joy. Just come along and see what fun it can be, and soon we'll be planning to stay. Where there's laughter and peace and contentment, and a welcome you've not had before. All your cares fade away as you dream or you play on the silvery sands of Tremore.
This is Yes. May was always looking for singers to sing her songs, you know. Yeah. And she had more famous singers than me now. Roy Gallagher now recorded some of her stuff. So there was some American company recorded a long playing record. I think I just got a few bob for making it. Connoisseur brought that out. They took it off the long player. I recorded for the American market. I haven't got it now. Recorded and forgot about it. Right. I got a few £100 for making, which was grand, like, you know, at the time. I didn't even know the company, but I just recorded it. It was a long player. She also composed. Now, she did the lyrics, and Tommy Dando did the music. Tommy Dando did the music for that.
Yeah.
And he did the music for her
songs.
Talk
to me about Tommy Dando. Did you talk
Tommy
to him?
Tommy Dando was a lovely man. I did one show in the Royal. It was a Sunday afternoon show, not very long before the Royal closed, actually. And it was, and I was delighted to play the Royal, even just once. You know, I did the Capitol now on the Olympia Gate and so, but the Royal was the mecca.
The creme de la creme.
I mean, the creme de la creme. So I did this afternoon concert, and I feel great about that, you know. And as I said, it wasn't on before it closed.
Would you regard the Royal concert as, say, the height of your stage career?
It would be, in terms of theatre.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the biggest theatre in Europe.
And do you remember what songs you sang?
I can't really remember, but the thing I do remember was the stage was very big, and I was very young, and I would have had fleet my step, you know, but... I'd always remember, like, you know, will I get over to the thing in time for my intro?
For our last piece today, we're going to talk to a man called Tony Larney, who was born and reared over in number 19 York Street. A very, very interesting character. Of all the men I've spoken to in the last couple of months or years, his life story would definitely make a film, and a very good film at that. Tony left Ireland in 1935 on a cattle boat with two of his friends and went and joined the British Army, of all places. The other two friends came home, but at the age of 15, Tony found himself enlisted in the King's Own, and he stayed there until 1942, when he came back after being taken prisoner by the Germans and injured in a commando attack on the island of Crete. Tony's story is so interesting, it's hard really to pick aspects out to talk about. But let's go back to Christmas, when he was a young child in the 1920s in York Street, and his father would come back from one of his merchant sea escapades, and this is what happened on Christmas Eve.
No matter where he'd be in the world, he'd be home for Christmas. If he had to walk, he'd be home for Christmas. He'd come in, and he used to go to a pub up in the top of Wine Tavern Street, Healy's. You go in there, as soon as you come home, he wouldn't tell who I am. You get the fella that used to deliver the beer. You say to him, "Now I want you to get me 6 wallpaper, a packet of flour paste, a big brown paper bag, about that width, filled with fig rolls, whiskey, brandy, lemonade, stout, all that." The fellas would bring it all over to 19 York, see? You pay for the lot. You come in about, you know, Christmas Eve, about 10 minutes to 12. Yeah, this is the Stuart's God. He was after sending a dozen of paper, a packet of paste, and all his beer. They'd bring that all over to the house. That'd be all left there. My mother knew then he'd be coming home. And he'd come in.
Oh, my
God. I used to sleep in the bed there.
I never knew all this.
My sister used to sleep in a little single bed. Him and her used to sleep in a big double bed. You come in, put a sack down, you wouldn't want to be in the sack.
Like, go on.
And he'd say, go up and tell Jem Nolan I want him. Jem Nolan lived upstairs. Jem Nolan's daughter was like a daughter to my father.
Sure, they got all together, yeah.
He loved them all. Go up and get May down here. Tell Jem I want him. This would be 10 minutes to 12.
On Christmas,
Christmas Eve. Two buckets, myself and May Nolan, take them down to Lollard and Kennedy's. Tell them to fill that one there, the one with the blue handle, the plain porter, and fill that one full of stout. Big quarries and enamel buckets. Two buckets. They'd be brought up and put beside the table. He'd start on that wall, and Jem Nolan would start on this wall.
It'd be charred, would they?
Hoiting the ceiling, and if the ceiling wasn't white enough after the wallpaper was up, the two of them are drunk and can do the whole lot again over.
Wow.
My mother was there putting rings of white pudding and black pudding and sausages. And then all the uncles would come over. Ben, Maylie, Joe, my mother's side. My father had only one sister, Molly. She run the Stephen's Green Cinema at one time. She'd come. They'd all get stuck in. About 10 to 6. Right? Everything fried up. Now he said, righto, get yourselves washed. Get up to Mass and then back home to your home houses. That was it.
And was there a Christmas tree up or decoration?
Oh, everything would be done. We chains and all would be up. Tires then was always hid. There was an old granny lived upstairs and he used to hide the tires in the grannies.
Do you remember what your first
time? Yeah, it was like a canister on a stand and a chimney with a whistle on the top of it. And you put water in this and put a candle under it. And when the water had boiled, the whistle keep whistling.
Like the whistle of a steam engine.
All brass, it was solid brass. That was the first tie I ever got. And my sister got a doll in pram. Nancy. He loved my sister.
And yes, that was Tony painting a completely chaotic picture of Christmas Eve in number 19 York Street, and that was his wife Molly interjecting throughout the interview. And Molly and Tony met, would you believe, when they were only 5. Molly had an aunt who lived in Clontarf and Tony had an uncle, and when they visited both, they met as children and they played. After Tony joined the army and came back in the late 30s to see his mother and patch it all up, he made a visit out to his uncle in Clontarf, and who did he see? Only Molly, who had now grown into a beautiful teenage girl. He'd made up his mind when he seen her he was going to marry that girl. They didn't really say much. He went away back to the army and he wrote a letter from the army to Fairfield, Molly Duffy, Fairfield and Clonshock. She got the letter and eventually they met up and they got married. So there's a great love story. The second story that Tony told me was that his father came to see him in 1942 when he'd heard that he was lying in a hospital bed in Liverpool after getting badly wounded over in Greece as a result of machine gun fire. So Tony was lying in the bed, plastered from head to toe, and who appeared in the doorway? Only his father. And Tony's eyes really beam with pride when he tells that story of his father appearing at the doorway. 6'4", 22 stone and hands like shovels and gold braid from head to toe. They then head off down to the Docklands. He's in a wheelchair, don't forget, and his father manages to carry him down with a few others down to a pub on the Docklands in Liverpool and spend the night together. And they come back very late and Tony was really, really delighted they had that night together. Because when his father leaves, he heads for the South China Seas and Tony gets word back that the ship has gone down and he will never see his father again.
6'6" tall, 22 stone, and his hands like shovels.
Raised on songs and stories.
That brings us to the end of the programme today. I hope you had a good listen, so don't forget and tune in next week, same time, for Gerry Cooley, Near 90 FM, for Raised on Songs and Stories.
Was Dublin town, the hallowed halls and houses, the haunting children's rhymes. That once was Dublin City in the rare old times.
This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.